This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Haney. The massive data breach at Anthem has exposed millions of records. Later in the show, we'll discuss ways to protect your digital information and what to do if you find out your personal information has been compromised. First up this afternoon, bisphenol A, or BPA, is a chemical commonly found in food and beverage packaging. Several studies have linked BPA to neurological defects, diabetes, breast, and prostate cancer, but the Food and Drug Administration has determined BPA is safe at the current levels occurring in food. In 2012, the FDA did, however, ban the use of BPA-based materials in baby bottles, sippy cups, and infant formula packaging. We look at the latest research on the dangers of BPA with Dr. Scott Belcher, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Cell Biophysics. He led a research team that recently conducted a study on BPA. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Hi, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I hear about BPA in the news, and I see a lot of the consumer products that I buy nowadays have things on them, like bottled water, for instance. I see it'll say it's BPA-free. But what exactly is bisphenol A, and just how widespread is its use?
Well, bisphenol A is a really important industrial chemical. It's been around for many years. It's used largely in the production of polycarbonate plastic, specific kind of hard plastic, and it's the monomer, or the single molecule that is put together to make these long forms of the polymer that make up our plastic. And that's probably the largest use in the United States.
So this is something you might find in a CD or a DVD or possibly the inside of a can that's preserving something, that type of thing?
Well, you bring up the other use of it, and that is as an epoxy resin in the linings of many of our cans, and it's used there. And that's where a lot of the concern in the use of food has come from. But yes, it's in the plastics, it's in our television, it's in my eyeglasses, so it's a very important industrial chemical.
So it's pretty much everywhere, isn't
it? It's pretty much everywhere. And in fact, bisphenol A has been documented as the largest pollutant that's coming out of landfills with estrogenic activity, or as that can act like the hormone estrogen.
Yeah, that's a term you hear connected to BPA. It's an endocrine disruptor. What exactly does that mean?
So an endocrine disruptor has a very specific definition with the EPA and regulatory agencies, but it's essentially any chemical that's a pollutant or coming into our bodies that can change how our hormones work within our body at any time during our body, any of these many things that hormones control.
So what are some of the health concerns that are linked to BPA?
Bisphenol A has been linked to a number of disorders, including breast and prostate cancer. There's some evidence that's come out most recently from our work of the effects on the cardiovascular system, that is having direct effects on the heart, as well as being able to change aspects of blood pressure.
Now, there are proponents of bisphenol A, and they'll point out that as you were saying, this has been around for decades now, and there have been probably 40 years of research and study into BPA, and that in a lot of cases it's been found safe, and the Food and Drug Administration says BPA is safe at the current levels occurring in food. So why are there these lingering concerns about BPA and still research going on into this substance?
Well, there's been a lot of research because there are limitations in how chemicals are determined to be safe or harmful. And part of this process goes into fundamentally how the difference between the effects on health or having adverse effects versus risk assessment. The process of risk assessment, when you have a new chemical that's out there, it undergoes the assumption that it's safe until proven guilty to cause harm. And quite often it's very difficult to purely define a harmful event with a chemical. That laid on top of it is you have to also have the other consideration is human exposure high enough to cause these harmful effects? So we can do some things in our basic research as an academic lab that doesn't typically go into these risk assessment tests. So we can look very carefully, for example, like we did, at the effects on the heart, which is not normally one of these tests. And then we can start to piece together this evidence that continues to build, that there's these health effects. And this is how there's sometimes that disconnect between what regulatory agencies like the FDA are telling consumers and some of these scientific articles that we're able to come out with and start to really investigate some of these possibilities of adverse health effects.
Scott, when did people start raising concerns about BPA, and what caused that? Was there an initial study that triggered people to say this could be a problem?
Probably some of the earliest studies were, to step backwards, actually, BPA was initially looked at as an estrogen-like drug. So its estrogen activity has been known since the 1930s. It was investigated actually as a drug, and it didn't work out very well for some of the reasons that it's actually considered safe by some of those, that it wasn't, if you took it by mouth, it didn't work as very well as a drug because the body was able to turn it over and inactivate it quite a bit. So it's been known for a long time that it could have these estrogen-like effects or these endocrine disruptive effects.
Now, you talked about the research that you led at UC that looked at BPA. Tell me about that. What was the overall aim of that study?
Well, the overall aim of that study, we were asking, so we've been interested for a scientific question of what's it doing through its receptors, through these estrogen receptors, and how does that affect the development of the brain or the development of the heart in our case in these most recent studies. And we were actually asking the very simple question of, were there effects that we could detect by bisphenol A in concentrations that are lower than those concentrations that are considered currently safe by the EPA and the FDA?
So what conclusions did you come to?
Some of the things that we saw that actually we could find effects, we were able to see effects on blood pressure. We were also able to see some very important sex differences in the effects. And one of these was the sensitivity of the female heart to the effects of BPA when that heart was stressed.
So you concluded that females are more adversely affected by this than males are. Is
that correct? Was the major conclusion from the results of our study. So we did a number of tests on both the heart and the system, and we saw that these changes could lead to what we considered would be very adverse effects. If, for example, in the heart of females that using models very similar to having a heart attack.
And just to be clear, you also saw cardiovascular issues in the male models.
In the males, we also saw and at times there are important sex differences between the male and female cardiovascular systems, and sometimes those sex differences were either lost and in some cases reversed.
Is that why females are more adversely affected by this, because of those differences?
In fact, we believe that's true, because typically for the tests that we ran, the females are generally protected, whereas the males are sensitive. And in fact, we saw a reversal of that, where in some cases the males became much more like the female heart in general, and then the female became very sensitive through some of these disrupted mechanisms that control how the heart functions.
Now, these were mouse models you were using, correct?
We were using mice, right.
How accurate a representation is that of how BPA will affect humans?
Well, typically in most of the studies that are done, it's a standard approach is to use rats and mice and other models to test the relevance to humans. And often they're very predictive. There are admittedly very different ways that the heart beats in between rats and mice and humans, but they've stood for many, many years as a good model of heart function and defects that could occur in the heart.
So enough similarities that they're valid.
Absolutely.
Now, Bob in Madeira emailed us, Scott, and he wanted to know what about BPA absorption through skin. He is concerned about things like thermal receipts.
Yeah. This has really come to attention recently with some studies that have come out using hand sanitizer and thermal receipts. One of the important things that people look at when you're considering risk is, what are the routes of exposure? And most of BPA is currently believed to be coming through ingestion of food and beverages, and a small fraction is probably coming in either through our skin or actually from hand-to-mouth movements that are very typical, and especially more so in children.
Now, Bob also said he's heard that using hand sanitizer increases absorption of BPA. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, that was the results of a recent study that showed exactly that, and which makes a lot of sense thinking about the chemical properties of bisphenol A. It's one that we call hydrophobic. So the alcohols and components of hand sanitizer would actually speed the transfer up across the skin of that.
And again, that goes back to the idea that this substance is pretty much everywhere. It's
pretty
used
much
in so many different products.
Yeah. So studies from the center of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, a number of years ago that showed that virtually everyone in their study had detectable levels of BPA metabolites in their urine. So.
Now, your study came on the heels of some research that was done by the University of Calgary. Are you familiar with that, and can you comment on what that study showed?
Yeah, that was a study that's using a different model. They're using actually zebrafish to investigate the effects on neuronal development. That is, whether BPA could affect how neurons are developing. And what they showed is that there were changes in the birth of the nerve cells that affected behaviors later on in their life. And it caused some changes that were related to what they saw as an increase in movement in these fish. But what's really interesting about that study is enzymes that led to the accumulation of actually estrogen in these fish, which is a normal part of the brain development, was changed in a way that there was actually more neurons that were growing, and this led to some problems in that. So it shows that very low levels, again, of bisphenol A can affect also brain development. This is one of the really important sensitive tissues that's considered and being looked at through a lot of research right now.
And it's interesting they use zebrafish. Why is that? Are there a lot of similarities between them and human and genetically?
Well, right now, one of the efforts that's going on in toxicity testing is to find what are referred to as alternative models, additional models that can be looked at and manipulated very easily to help screen and speed up the process of looking at whether chemicals are hazardous or not. And zebrafish is one of these accepted models that has been looked at by the EPA, and there's very large research efforts, and it's a really interesting and fabulous model of looking at some aspects of toxicity. So it's one of the many tools that are implemented to look at whether a chemical is hazardous or not. So zebrafish is one small component of all the things that's going into looking at the hazards of these things.
We'll continue our conversation about BPA after the break. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me to talk about bisphenol A and the latest research on it are Dr. Scott Belcher, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Cell Biophysics. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Scott, has there ever been any research done on the economic effects of BPA? In other words, how much its health effects cost and how much we could save if we eliminated that?
There has been some limited study, and there's some more studies that are anticipated to be coming out. One study that comes to mind has estimated for the proposed impact of bisphenol A on obesity and involving cardiovascular diseases does put the estimate of the economic impact in the billions of dollars. My recollection is somewhere around $3 billion.
And have they ever looked at what might happen if we were to reduce it or eliminate it as far as savings would go in health?
The reality is bisphenol A is a very important component of our industrial landscape. And complete elimination and banning of it right now is one of these things that would be extremely difficult to imagine. There are alternatives and other components. I think this leads to one of the larger problems concerning about risk is, in fact, if we have a chemical component that's involved in plastics, that frankly, a lot of times we don't know exactly what the chemical composition of that is. We have a hard time finding out what the additives are, what things like fire retardants are included in our plastics that we don't think about. And some of the components of that plastic are just simply not known. So essentially, we don't know what those things are. So, you know, some of those problems may be something that's more addressable than thinking that we're going to remove polycarbonate plastics from our existence.
Has anybody banned it so far? Any countries that have banned it that you're aware of?
There are certain bans in application. Some of the food products, especially for children, and in our country, the having the bisphenol A is actually not. It's been banned by the FDA, but that was because of the lack of use of BPA. There was an agreement with the manufacturers of sippy cups and baby bottles and things that they were no longer going to be in there. And then there was kind of a mutual agreement on this ban with BPA that they're no longer going to be used in that.
Yeah, we talking about things that you can substitute for BPA. I think one of them is BPS. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Are we doing research on that, and are there concerns about its safety now?
Yeah, I have colleagues here at UC that are directly looking at BPS, and there's a number of groups. That you mentioned the zebrafish study recently. BPS or bisphenol S was also looked at that in the study, and its structure is very, very similar to BPA, and it's not surprising that it behaved the same way that it does. There are some plastic applications where it has been substituted for, and one of them is potentially in the receipts,
Thermal receipts.
The thermal receipts that we've talked about. So, you know, that's one of these things that, yes, it's a substance, and it's not BPA, but it acts in many ways like BPA.
Let's talk with Nick in Westchester. Good afternoon, Nick. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Doing great.
My question is, you know, growing up, I was always told never drink out of a plastic water bottle that had water in it that had been sitting out in the hot sun due to BPA chemicals being released. And, you know, lately I've been drinking coffee out of those red Solo cups you can get from this grocery store, and I was just wondering if it's safe, or if a heated beverage causes those BPA chemicals to be released.
Okay, Nick, thank you for the question. We appreciate it.
Yeah, Nick, one of the studies that we did a number of years ago was looking at the release of BPA from the Nalgene bottles, and that was at a time before some of the substitutes were, and in fact, heat does increase the release of the plastic components, including BPA, that are in there. Yep.
The Pacific Northwest Laboratory and the FDA published a study, I think it was last month, where the researchers actually fed people tomato soup with traceable BPA, and then they monitored and they found out the body essentially neutralized 998 of every 1,000 BPA molecules. And that's contrary to what was found in other research, where it was pointed out that BPA is absorbed into the bloodstream. So what does this study add to the whole conversation? Does it put any of our concerns to rest at all?
Well, I mean, that study is that came out is from a group that's been looking at what we call pharmacokinetic parameters of this, and that's essentially if you take something in, how quickly is it broken down and how quickly is it inactivated? And we've known for a very long time that a large majority of bisphenol A is very rapidly metabolized and turned into an inactive form. What we've been looking at is actually these low levels that are circulating in the blood. As you take in more and more, you're going to have this free fraction, and what that specific component of that unmetabolized and active that's in the blood is really a point of discussion right now. In that study, you know, there's a group of people that are saying there's more in the blood or there's less in the blood that can do damage, and that's one of the important points when you're looking at the risk assessment is how much is there and how much is available to do damage. And those were a lot of the scientific discussions right now, and that's one more piece of data that's going to be involved in the discussion here as we try to solve some of these answers is, are our levels getting high enough to be doing harm in humans and people?
So can we say anything definitively about BPA at this point? Is it as bad as it seems or not as bad as it seems? Or is this just something we'll just have to keep researching to figure out that answer?
Well, I think the definitive answer on this, there has been now thousands of studies that show that bisphenol A can cause effects. Some of these effects appear to be clearly harmful. And I think now what we can really say is there's enough information out there to make a regulatory decision based on combination of the science that's out there, as well as some of the longstanding large regulatory-based studies that are going, and that some agreements can be made at what are safe levels and what not. And it's one of these things that we're going to have to revisit as more and more of these chemicals come into our systems.
So if someone is concerned about BPA, how do they avoid it? Or since it's so prevalent, how do they at least reduce their exposure to it?
Well, there's a few things that you can do. You know, many of the sources say, you know, try to eat fresh fruits and vegetables and avoid your canned food. Avoid heating things in plastic containers. Use glass containers. You can let your water pipes run for a little bit. Give them a good 10, 30 seconds to flush the chemical accumulation in there, because BPA is present in your PVC pipes. And so that water that's been sitting overnight can do. So you can do things like that and just try to avoid it as best you can at this point.
Well, Scott, thanks for speaking with us this afternoon.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Scott Belcher, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Cell Biophysics. After the break, in light of Anthem's massive data breach, we'll look at internet security, how to protect yourself, what to do if you find out your information has been compromised. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.